Let me mention a few short things. So, I was gone for almost 4 months. This was one of the most variegated and I think intriguing tours I've ever had. I think you've seen maybe from the website as well. There's Jagannath. Did we put any of the two reports on the board here? None of the last two new ones? Yes, the one for Russia. Okay, so the. I guess the one before that wasn't. So most of you maybe saw on the board just a list of events. We did almost 100 interviews just in Ukraine, you know, in Russia alone. So it was quite intense. Almost every day there was like 5 or 6 different kinds of programs. I never did so many courses. I did about 20 courses, 22 courses on 18, 19 different subjects. And so that was quite exciting, but, you know, very demanding. Like in France, the course we did was all day long for a couple of days. Most times it was a couple of hours. Sometimes a few hours in the morning, a few hours in the evening. And of course, by your mercy, I was able to do it. Some devotees were amazed that I was doing so many courses and so many secular things at the same time. But of course, when I was here before I left, and I was like a hermit, so that during that time, as we were working on the books, I also was taking some time almost every day and organizing for the courses. And it really paid off because once I started traveling, and I left and I went to Italy first, and I came late because I left right after we had after the card had come down from the Rath Yatra. And so I joined the devotees in Italy. They had already been there for about 4 days for a 7-day conference and festival. So everything started off like that. I came from there and then I went to Ireland and then to England and to France and so many places. In each place there was the normal schedule of the temple programs and then the seminars and workshops for the devotees and then lots of things with media and with leadership, business community, in so many areas. So this last one, we didn't even do a tour report like we normally do, because it was just so much detail. And so we just asked one of the devotees to make a list of just some of the things, and get an idea. And I was thinking, some devotees are wondering, how am I doing this? And I thought, well, my secret is Gita Nagari. I come here and I get the inspiration, and I can reflect. And I can write, I can organize, and walk and see the cows, and come and pray to the deities, and deal. And each place was also with initiation, so many different countries, Krishna centers, lots of nice devotees from many different countries. I was happy to see how many opportunities are there, as well as how many challenges these places having. I will be here for about 10 days and then I go to Detroit for about a week and then a few days in Washington. Then I come back for about 2 weeks and then I'm off again. Right now we have to decide how I'm going to do it. I think Hong Kong, Australia, Malaysia, Fiji. I was just had a checkup with the doctors, and I'm coming to a greater understanding about my health issues, which I'm not losing any sleep over. I'm not so bothered with. It's like while I'm here, the next few days I'm going to try to see if I can get an appointment in Lewistown, because I'm having like a shortness of breath. And we thought there may have been some heart situation, so I had heart checkup a couple of days ago, but my heart is quite fine. Something with the lungs. But what's really happening, and the beauty and as well as the complexity, is that this kind of lifestyle is just, it's unnatural. That every 3 days in a different country and 4 days or so, and Different air, different water, different food, different... Even right now I'm going through a parasite cleanse, which I started a couple of days ago, and the next 7-8 days I'll be working on that. Is that bodies are not just designed to be accelerating such high altitudes and low altitudes in such a short time. It's not designed for the kind of radiation you experience in the planes. It's not designed that, you know, you don't really have a chance to adjust to any environment when you're traveling so much, you know, so much like that. And so I can see that the health is deteriorating because connected with that, but at the same time, you know, this is our life, and we are excited about being available as much as we can. It's like a few days ago I was in Mexico, and we have so many more disciples coming forth from the books and things. And now I'm, of course, agreed to be GBC, which I really didn't want to, but Gubasad, who's a GBC there, was asking for the last 3 years that I would assist as co-GBC. Then this year, Mayapur, the GBC chairman, came to see me and also made a request and maybe a demand that I would get involved, because most of the devotees who come are either my Shiksha or Diksha disciples, so he felt that it was important that I should take more involvement. So, I agree. So, I have to look at the near future also, because I want to really spend more quality time here in helping us to be able to, you know, develop, and not just that I come here as like more like a retreat in that sense. As I travel, then I try to be fully at all the programs, at least in the morning program. Evening, usually we're out doing some outreach preaching. And then I make myself available all during the day for, you know, for darshans. Like even the African devotees, they were surprised, because when they see me in Africa as well as the other countries, I'm very accessible at all times. And that's, you know, good, because in most places I'm only there for once a year. And so devotees are not, I'm not able to connect with them and their issues and projects and concerns, and don't see them again for a whole year. And since I made so many commitments that I would come once a year, which seems like a small commitment, but then when you add on so many different places, then once a year becomes rather awesome. So, more than likely I will do like some of the leaders are doing now, is that in the future we will not travel as much, because it's maybe just impossible, improbable, impractical. But now, yeah, I think still we should keep on. Prabhupada said how this traveling took 10 years off his life. I was talking with Madhava Chai and a few other doctors. They said he could even do more than that. Vijayabha Thakamaraj was ill when we came to Russia. And he's having a lot of back issues. And the analysis from the doctors was that so much sitting on the planes that it's giving them some excessive back spasms and troubles. Blood clots. Yeah, blood clots also. I don't know. So it's some of those issues of modernity, that so many things are accessible now. People can be in touch with each other. Everybody got a cell phone now, every place. Tell the devotees, but you know, getting knocked, your cell phones don't work. I'm happy. They don't work. I was just putting out a report last night, you know, with the child abuse case now. It's wrapping up in some ways. The institution of ISKCON is filing bankruptcy. But then everyone who was a leader is also, you know, under suit, under the litigation. And so we were contacted a couple of days ago. After I got back from Mexico, I got the correspondence that the leaders have to declare their assets and to see how much that they will be able to pay. And of course, we all tax something in general, but this is an additional tax. And I was kind of go through my assets, and I realized that I don't have any. And so I was thinking, this is kind of amazing. And so I wrote back, I said, you know, I have no bank account. I have no property. I don't even have a cell phone. I don't even have a credit card. I said, I don't even travel with a computer. Even when I travel, I have a devotee who does the computer work. I said, I don't have any assets. I don't have a car. And so, but then I said, but you know, but I'm very happily impoverished. So because I prefer it that way. And I'm happy because, you know, when I travel, then devotees have to figure out what leg of the ticket, you know, they're going to pay for. And other than Africa, the devotees usually cover the travel. Africa, they can afford it. I said, so, I really, I don't have anything, but I have everything. You know? It's like here, I'm staying in this house. I mean, it's not in my name. I don't have anything in my name. So I don't really own anything. There was a time we had a bank account, the Urban Spiritual Development, and that's been unfunctional for some time. I think we even have an overdraft. We overdrew, but we owe the bank, in other words, maybe a couple hundred dollars. So I thought, I don't really have anything, not even a cell phone, and I don't want one either. Sannyasis, we all have cell phones now, but I thought, my God, this is wonderful in one sense, but then you're always connected, you know, like you're always on the line, and I think this is a little complex. And they're finding also that all these things are not neutral. Even if we're at the computer too long, and we're at the microwaves and the cell phones and all the electric wires and things and the satellite and all this and all these things. It's also affecting people's minds and their nervous systems. It's, you know, weakening the immune system in different ways. It adds to, it sets an atmosphere more for, you know, health issues. And definitely brings on more tension. I was looking last year at the number of our gurus who have hypertension, and when I went in for my checkup this time, the doctor said, high blood pressure. So I asked Madhava, I said, everybody have to follow through on this? He says, yeah. He says, you better take the tablets they told you to take. So I said, okay, body, what's next? Yeah. So, but obviously these things become even more amplified when we are so much worried about, you know, whatever assets we do have, and whatever money we have, and so much more worried about, you know, trying to be connected on every particular level of modern technology. There's no downtime, in a sense. And everywhere I went, nobody could even consider that I had any kind of health challenge, because 5-6 programs a day, and I led Harinams every couple of days, and lots of kirtans. I told one person, I said, you know, my father, he left the body when he was about 96 years old. And he didn't show any kind of, what do you call, sickness until maybe the last 6 months before he died. And so, we have a long lifeline, and we don't show his illness very, very well. And plus, I'm not really, you know, actually ill, in that sense. So this was the most exciting, let's say it was the most active preaching tour I've ever had. And I've had a lot of very intricate preaching tours with lots of variegateness, far beyond what I could imagine could be arranged, far beyond what I, you know, what I anticipated. The sweetest part, of course, is reciprocation, you know, with so many devotees in, you know, so many different countries. I want to pass around first. This is a Mahaprasad from Vrindavan. Saturday, one of the Guru Kulis from in Washington area had just come back. And so he gave this to me, and I thought I shouldn't be fully greedy. I should share it. So I'll pass it around. And I'm just going to do a few minutes, maybe pass a few things out, which will show you some things connected with the tour. First is the Russia. I had the chance to participate with the leaders there in the advertisement and some of the procurement for a new temple that's being built. And it's going to be so important that it's going to be connected with the Mayapur project. So our devotees are in a dilemma, but they're trying to use it in an auspicious way. The land and the building we have now that the temple is in belong to the government. And so we've been just, you know, renting the building out. Now the government is, you know, demanding that the building be given back over. So the devotees are being pushed out of the facility that we have. That's in Moscow. But at the same time, the government was arranging to give us some land in a very choice area of the city where we can be able to build a temple. The Orthodox Christians are really complaining and going against it, trying to sabotage it. Hopefully that won't happen. But what I'll pass out first is some nice drawings showing this temple. It'll be very gorgeous. So some of the while I was there, I had a chance, you know, to meet with some businessmen in Russia, and to try to assist, get them to assist in trying to help out with the project. I did, you know, when I mentioned about almost 100 interviews, I mean, I did all the major talk shows practically, all of the major, what do you call it, news programs. And what was so exciting is that when I would do some of the news programs on national TV, the national TV from Moscow means that it shows all over CIS. And so that's like for 300 million people, which is a large audience. So I would do programs like on a major TV show, similar to what would be like CBS here or ABC. And the anchor man would say, I give an example, quoting him exactly. I usually don't have much respect for leaders and even for people who talk about leadership training because there's so much corruption in some of these countries, like everywhere, but a lot of obvious corruption. But he says, but I read the Swami's leadership book and I give it my stamp of approval. So here you have, you know, what was previously, you see, a communist country, and a country that was also very, you know, anti-American, and so anti-spiritual, anti-American. And now I, you know, Krishna arranged that we can be able to come in such places and be able to be on the major news program where we can not only appear, but the anchor, you know, having read the book, because it's just, you know, tens and tens of thousands of our books going out, particularly in Ukraine and in Russia. So, or I would have, like, for instance, a lecture at a major university, and I'd be introduced by the mayor. So the mayor of the city would introduce me. And see, a lot of these things happen because of the power and influence of the devotees. Just so many devotees have taken the Krishna consciousness, and they're in so many different, you know, different positions in some of these cities. And so they would share the books with their colleague or their, you know, CEO or supervisor or rector of the university. And because they were interested and they were respected in their institutions, then the people they would give the literatures to would take it very very seriously. So I would have like that. I would have, you know, a university program, and at the program I'd be introduced by the mayor. Before I would do the program, I would do an interview before I would start. Every time, I mean, coming off the plane, TV would be there, and when I leave, you know, I would do an update on what I did, who I spoke with, what the level of exchange was, what we're planning to do for the future based on the initial contact. And so a kind of a yoga maya thing happened. Like last year, I got a lot of leverage because this, you know, this Eddie Murphy program that was shown, which went all around the world. There's a program he did called The Saint or The Guru or something. And anyway, there was some rumor that I was inspiration, you know, behind that. Which, I don't know where that came from, but, you know, we rode with it. And so, they would show me at a press conference or at some public program, and then they would show a clip of the Eddie Murphy, you know, show where he's speaking some kind of, you know, philosophical points. We heard that it was quite interesting. And then they would, you know, they would show me in the field, you know, doing something. I'm at, you know, at a museum, I'm at a university, I'm meeting with, you know, some of the politicians or whatever. So that was very newsworthy, and we were able to get lots of leverage on, you know, national TV stations. And then this time, the devotees who did the promotional work, and my main disciple who does this, he was in charge for many years of organizing things for entertainers. So he had a lot of contacts in different places. So he just kind of reactivated some of those contacts, but this time in trying to share Krishna consciousness. So he played me up in three ways: as one African king, two as a scholar, Western scholar of, you know, of international relations, and three as a Vaishnava, as a guru. So from that pitch, any media that he approached, one of these worked. But we were shocked. I would say, at least I was shocked. They weren't. I was shocked, but what worked the most was the traditional African ruler. To the point that they gave me security, and they had some idea that I had my own country. So I would be traveling with, you know, security to places because, you know, him is a special guest of the country. They didn't want anything to happen to me. And so we had, you know, our own security, you know, music-free security in that way, which, you know, hyped up the programs also. And it hyped up the press because it made it more newsworthy for the press. And so this, therefore, each time we would come down right off the airplane, it would start. Cameras and things and your microphones thrown in my face and whatnot. So lots of chance to preach. The leaders also, they were amazed because some of the programs were recorded through CIS. So there were some days I would appear like at four or five different cities, you know, at the same time. And some of the devotees, they were saying, you know, what's going on? You know, how are you doing this? And I said, well, you know, some things are recorded and whatnot. And other things, they, you know, were shared on the spot. It would be live in that way. Now, it was so phenomenal, and I just, you know, you saw some reports. I don't want to belabor this. But it was so phenomenal that two times we were on the front page of newspapers. And, you know, imagine that, you know, in Moscow. Moscow's major paper, that's the government paper, which is also the same newspaper that goes to all the embassies all around the world, had one of our best articles. And the articles in Russian says, so we hope next he will give consult, you know, to our president. It was amazing. You know, he's a government paper. You know. And then I had hour shows where the, what do you call it, director of the TV station wanted me particularly to speak on how people should get ready for the elections. The elections were, I guess, going on now in about a week or so. So they wanted me to speak on what the citizens should be concerned about and how to elect good leaders. And the other part was what the leaders should understand and be about who are going to be in charge of running the cities and running the country. And so it was like, you know, really timely that I could come in and this is a Hare Krishna, you know, that they saw me as Hare Krishna was offering some insight on spiritual topics and that we could be received on that level. The GBC, the Russia, said that this is like never happened before. TV stations I was on. I mean, I was even on a station where they do the Academy Awards. You know, they have their own Academy Awards program. And so I was invited as the only international guest. You know, I have this TV show that we do here in Giranagari now. When I'm there on Sundays and we're filming, that show is in its eighth year. And of course, the one in Chicago, now 1 year in Detroit, 3 years on cable. So I was the international guest with all of these famous, you know, TV personalities who were together. We were doing together for an hour show on, like, sort of like the Oprah Winfrey show here, comparable there. And you know, just a little guy who's coming to, you know, be with the devotees and do something. And then we get invited on that. And I had a chance to address the need for quality education, I mean quality TV programs. And they're not just bringing people down in the lower modes. So we had, you know, these kind of things happening, which is quite amazing. But again, a lot of it was the doors opened up with the idea that we were having these three kind of worldviews. There was American, who was accepted as a traditional leader in Africa. And with all of that, I'm following a kind of an Indian philosophy. It was very intriguing to them, in that sense. So we had so many experiences. So based on that, I was trying to use some of that media stuff in helping the temple and trying to make myself available to talk to some of the businessmen to get them to try to finance and to help get around, you know, some of the legal things that the Christian church was throwing up. So first, I'll pass this around. You see, it's a very beautiful building. This is what they're anticipating doing. And also, what came out while I was there, a few days after I arrived, remember I said last year when I was in CIS, we had this big impact. Not as big as this year, but big impact. And one disciple of Jayapataka Maharaj, who was a writer, professional writer, thought it would be intriguing to do a biography on me, which is a little strange, a biography and you're still alive. So she thought that with the impact that we were able to do by the mercy of Prabhupada last year, that it would be newsworthy and relevant to write a biography about my life in a way that it would appeal to devotees and to non-devotees also. So I wasn't sure how she would do this, you know, because she's in Russia, and although she knows some English is not her first language, and how she was going to contact people that was necessary, and these things take a long time. But somehow, and this girl is very, very, you know, adventurous and also quite dynamic. So somehow she, with Sri Shapanashah from Cleveland, were able to put together, you know, a biography that's come out in Russian, and they're working on it in English now, translated. And she contacted, which is quite amazing. She was, I'll pass it around. She was able to come, and she has, you know, my family members in here. She has, you know, when I was, you know, child evangelist. She contacted all politicians that I work with, judges, and before I became a devotee, schoolmates, even old girlfriends. Unbelievable. So, so somehow, this came together. And a couple of days after I arrived, I saw this book, and I was wondering, what is this? It's a biography. And, you know, because it's in Russian, you won't be able to read it. But you can see a few pictures that, you know, that are there. It's called Rich, Rich Beggar. Rich Beggar. Yes, it shows that coming out of poverty and a beggar, but at the same time rich, with mercy of Prabhupada. And there are pictures of me when I was a kid. My family, and then some devotees from different parts of the world wrote various things, but we were shocked. And it's just selling. We just got Jishnu was helping with my email 2 days ago, and she said that the English version is finished, but they just have to edit it. And she wanted to separate, and I told her not. the letters I got from Prabhupada, she wanted to separate those and put into another book. But I told her, no, you know, let's keep it all together. Especially, you know, I wanted to, those letters there. The English will be rough, and it'll be something that Lila Katha will probably have to, you know, have to refine. Here's a picture of my mother. You know. I think Madanjani is in here also. Anyways, you know, you can be able to pass it around. A little unusual biography when you're still alive. Maybe I'm supposed to die soon, I don't know. But interesting. So, and the devotees like it because I'm a pretty bizarre character, and they look at things in my life. It's a little strange. Unusual. Shows a life, surely, where Krishna's mercy was there. Surely not my competence or my abilities. But, you know, lots of unusual miracles happening constantly. And here's some pictures of the disciples in Russia and Ukraine. It's passed around. Yes, I heard that as I was traveling on the BT Swami list now, there are many places devotees are sending photographs in Croatia and in Bosnia. England, were they sending some in England? Out in England? Ukraine and Russia especially, which is very good. Which is nicer because if they send pictures, you know, then we can travel together. We can be together a little closer. This again was the press release that was sent around in Russia and Ukraine. I'll just show you. You know, after 100 or so interviews, and so many of the newspaper articles were like a whole page or a page and a half. And before I left, one or two devotees, you know, just hand me some of the articles as they came to, we had a festival, which was called on the Black Sea, at Divnamors. And so several of the cities I had gone to, so maybe a week or two before, then when some of the devotees came, we all, you know, were together for the festival, which was about 3,500 devotees, which is awesome. You think about that. This festival is the biggest festival we have in the whole of ISKCON. Each year now is bigger than the Mayapur festival. And by Krishna's mercy, my class each year has been the biggest. This year my class was 2,000 people. I'm not sure if they showed any of those photographs also. So I did it from the ballroom. I'd be on the stage in the ballroom, and I had like about six microphones. I'll show you how we had to juggle. So I would have a translator right next to me who spoke Russian. I would have a translator who spoke Russian and Croatian. I'm sorry, Russian, who would then feed me in English because it was interactive. My classes were always interactive. And so what I had to do is I would have microphones on the far side of the room, of the ballroom. One on this side and one in the center. So when people were sharing, we'd have runners who would run with the microphones in this way. And then if they were speaking in Russian, then the devotee who was translating for me would speak in English in my ear on this side so I could hear. And as I was speaking English, then she would translate into Russian so they could hear. And then I had a person on the board who would do the Russian English. And so they would write everything that I would say into Russian. And I had the devotee next to me writing everything in English, so I could know what was going on. And so it was quite, you know, quite interesting. I guess I was like a crazy man, but it was exciting. So that we would be able to have full interaction, and people would be able to speak, since they all know Russian. There was no reason for them to have to hear the English, which it would slow down, make the class twice as long. And when I spoke English, of course, necessary for them to to understand what I was, you know, what I was saying in Russian. And then when they wrote in Russian, I didn't have a clue what it was, so I had to have somebody writing in English with me as they were writing in Russian. You know, so it's quite a way of engaging lots of devotees also. So we have a stage here. We'd have three or four devotees with me, helping me out in this, with what was going on, you know, with the exchange, and then the microphones, and the devotees running the microphones. And it was kind of fun to the devotees also, the way that, you know, all this was coordinated. I learned a little bit how to do this last year when I tried in Ukraine to do a course like that, and in Russia also, but it wasn't quite as smooth, and with the dynamics. Now it's my second year doing this sort of course, so it worked out quite well. And we would keep, we would just do, instead of blackboard, we would do flip charts. So we would have the whole wall, you know, ballroom all lined up with charts all over the place. I almost began to learn how to see a little Russian and you know, from the writings. So now, because things are so big, like last year, remember I said how sometimes people would contact us knowing that wherever I went, you know, the media would come. So like one mafioso guy who was opening up a big museum, he called and asked me to please come, you know, knowing that the TV and the radio and newspaper would come. And he gave me some gifts and things like that. So given that that was happening, we tried to use it to focus on the temple, to focus with the different preaching projects, to help where devotees were getting challenged. And in one of the cities, after I arrived, the president told me, he said, "Maharaj, you know, our movement has been banned. And 3 years ago, you know, we were attacked. That we found the Christian church sponsored about 50 thugs, and literally it was very vicious. They came into the temple, they practically killed, you know, some of the devotees. They threw the devotees out the window, they put the devotees unconscious, they came in with pipes, you know, beating the devotees. Since then, our movement has been considered, I mean, before that, but that added to it, which was their fault, not ours, but our movement, you know, has lots of trouble. So the president told me he wanted me to do a real big media thing like I did in other places there. And I thought, you should have told me before I came. I'm not sure I would have come. But I thought, okay, one thing or other is going to happen. Either they're going to arrest me and put me in jail, deport me, or we're going to have a breakthrough. Because they had me on the main TV show, main newspaper. And so I felt, okay, we're going to get heavy reaction, and they're going to escort me out of the country, or we're going to break through. So, you know, let's go for it. So, the good side happened. That's one of the places I was on the front page of the newspaper. And it was one of the best interviews we had on television. It was for a whole hour. And the guy who interviewed me was very famous in the country, also connected with the Orthodox Church. But was somehow Krishna affected his heart. He was like so favorable. And the interview went very nice. He spoke very nicely. And how he gave me the questions. He was very respectful. And then 5 minutes before the program was over, he said, "We have a surprise for you." Then he brought in all these gifts. You know, the Russian people are very multicultural. So they want to give you the key to the city. They want to give you some special statue. They some special painting and something that represents this or that or particular time. And so he brought in, you know, like a series of gifts as, you know, as a way to close the program, thanking me for coming into the country. So the president said, after I left, that they had a breakthrough, that in 3 days, that we were able to have, you know, a breakthrough that hadn't happened in years and years and years. So, you know, this was nice to hear. The other thing we tried to capitalize on was visiting as many social welfare facilities as possible. So here's the first picture I'm showing. It's at an orphanage. And we had a chance to meet with the kids, very sharp kids, beautiful kids, and the staff. And we're trying to arrange for them some international help. One of my disciples in South Africa is a manager of the big company that does these ink pens and school supplies. And so they have a budget where every year they donate for some kind of charitable affair. So I thought, oh, okay, let's see how to connect this. So we're going to try to connect with him to send, you know, school supplies there. And so that went off big, you know. We come in, Hare Krishna's concerned about them. We get prasadam. We teach them, we explain some things about the importance of taking care of children, And we provide, you know, some physical things on the way also. So this is the first one I'm passing around. You know, because you won't be able to read this in some Russian, all you can do is just look at the pictures. Here's some another newspaper. This is the one that was a government paper. This is, you know, it's not a private paper, but it's the voice of the government. And so it's a government paper, and the caption is here something like, now we expect, or now we're waiting for him to give counsel to our president. So I saw many politicians in this country, and did, you know, several press conferences. And my main thing was how to arrest the social degradation. And I would find out in each country I would go to in CIS, I had devotees who would facilitate me with all kinds of statistics, so I would know exactly what some of the major issues were that country was confronting with. And here I addressed, you know, mainly divorce and alcoholism. Russia has the highest divorce in the world and takes more alcohol than any other country except France. But because of that, it destabilizes the families. Men batter women a lot. The men die, you know, very early because of the sicknesses connected with alcoholism, etc. And so I would address these things, and they would all, and most of the time they were shocked. 75% of the time they would be shocked that I was an American and was sensitive to the issues that they were dealing with, you know, on a day-to-day basis. But the idea was to be relevant, to capture their attention, so then I could try to share philosophy. And of all the articles, I only had one article of all these dozens and dozens of articles that was unfavorable in one sense. And even was favorable for us, because it only said, I had a program in this huge auditorium, people came, you know, to hear about business. They were all, you know, people in the business field, and they wanted me to do a whole thing on, you know, ethics and business. And so I talked about principle-centered leadership and ethics and business. And then I, as I always do, I try to find a way to sneak in more philosophy and about the four rules and regulations. So when I talked about the four rules and regulations, one of the reporters who was there in the auditorium wrote in her article many good things, but she said, but then the consultant brought up the issue about no eating meat, no intoxication, no sex. And she says, and this is just totally romantic, totally idealistic, you know. You know. But that was the only thing that even you know even appeared to be negative. And because we saw it as positive, that she quoted exactly what I said and showed that as I was talking about, you know, practical issues dealing with management and leadership concerns, that I was being loyal to the fact that there's something higher and this is the way to be about it. And I wasn't intimidated, you know, to bring that up, even though they came there mainly, you know, just to hear business, MC talk. So that was nice. But all the other articles, extremely favorable. You know, we were amazed. I would be, it was so active, I would several times be in the car being interviewed while I'm driving to some other place. You know, it was like no time, you know, to sit down any one place, hardly. So there were times when, and that's what really amazed me. Three times we did that, and they were some of the best articles. I was thinking, how these people capture everything that I said in a rushed mood. I felt they're going to misquote me, but here's a chance for free publicity to help the devotees. So I did it. So I figured the only way I can meet you is that you have to drive to this engagement with me, and we have a half an hour to talk in the car. And they record, and then, you know, then a full-page article would come out, you know, very, very favorable. And then I realized this is also Yogamaya, because for them, it made it even more that I was wanted and important in their country, and that I was dealing with them personally by letting them sit in the car with me and do the interview, that I was, you know, valuing the fact that I wanted to connect with them, but I really didn't have the time, but I was making the time in such a way. And then sometimes they would stay for the program, you know, also. But this one's a government paper. And half the time you saw, I'm in this African cloth, or it's actually Indian. This is Indian, you know, garb where you wear the kirta and the silk punja, silk pants, and then the shawl that goes over, the jacket. Then the hat, of course, you know, is African. Yeah, this was the one of the of that country where the movement had been banned. They had me on a front page of the paper, and the article was like 2.5 pages. It's amazing. This was Ukraine, and several times I would be getting ready to give Bhagavatam class, so I had to finish it up fast, or I would have to in a darshan short and just dash out somewhere to do an interview. By the Vijnana Maharaj, the GBC of Russia, by the Itanya Swami and a few others, they were really happy because they said we were able to facilitate their preaching, of course, there, and expose them to a lot of people who they normally wouldn't have been able to be exposed to. And see, what was really beautiful is that even though I came in disguise with this secular approach and come in like a needle and whatnot, but as we would have chance to address people on radio or in the press conference or on TV, that Krishna just opened up so many ways that we were able to preach. This one even having the picture that was here in Gita Nagari at the initiation and wedding ceremony. Because once your foot is in the door, or once people accept that there's something that's relevant, then so much can be shared. Anyway, I think you get the idea. Even England, the BBC, I had programs, I had the initiation ceremony on the BBC, when I got off the airplane, first coming to the place, the news media was there. Ireland, England, this is from Ireland. And then the initiation wedding we did in England was shown on international TV. The BBC is international. That was also quite amazing. One, two last ones. This is a paper also. So I think you get the basic idea that it was quite fruitful, a lot of experiences, a lot of adventure, a lot of espionage that somehow worked quite well. Now, when I get ready to go back next time, what's going to happen? I was just thinking, what happens next year? One, I don't think I'll be able to top this, but I was also thinking, maybe they won't let me in the country next year. That already they have a website in Russia, that's attacking me. That's put out by the Orthodox Church. So I don't know exactly what's going to happen, whether I'll be able to go next time. But I feel, well, when I was there, I did what I could. I got some bomb. The opportunity was there. Now, it's a little scary because it was so amazing that one would expect some kind of reaction the next day. That they may, they may refuse my visa, or what? But we'll see. What the Orthodox are going to do. See, in these places, the Orthodox Church is even heavier than the mafia in some ways, because their influence, this is money and power. And they, they persuade the politicians. They have big influence on them. Since religion wasn't allowed before, now it is allowed. And so whoever has the main foundation in these places, they have so much influence, so many opportunities. And this is why they're attacking our movement in so many ways. They had put, Savodhi showed me one website, they translated for me, and they're saying that I'm FBI or I'm CIA, and I'm just pretending to be a consultant on leadership, but I'm really just a Hare Krishna who's expert at being able to trick people, and that they better be careful because I'll probably wind up taking all their money. and it was like so an amazing thing. I said, okay, where's the money to take? that I was just an agent of President Bush. Yeah. He said, you know, just an agent of President Bush, you know, that we shouldn't allow him into our country. Don't let him in your institutions. His books is causing a revolution. You know, he was saying things like that. And somehow they had spies because they knew exactly where I was going to be going. I guess it's not hard these days with modern technology. Here, you know, after leaving Africa, after leaving Russia, CIS, England, Italy, France, etc. Then we went to Africa. I'll show you. I may have mentioned it once before, but in Nigeria, one of my disciples is editor of one of the major newspapers in Port Harcourt, and so every week. I have a four-page column that comes up, an article. That's four-page. It's a column. And so, like here, you see it's always on page 7 of this one. And what they do is that they just take excerpts out of some of my books. So the people think that I'm there somehow, or I'm writing in from Washington, you know, regular articles. But they just take different things out and they put it in the paper. When I came, then the week that I came, then they had me on the front page, along with, you know, with the article that's on page 7. I get some email on a regular basis also from people who are reading this. Since we answered them, you know, right away, they think that I'm, you know, a little more available and accessible than I am, but I'm way here in America. So from that, it's built up a huge following in the congregation, a very respectable, influential people. The editor was telling me and some of his staff that some people buy the paper just to get the article on page 7, and that he know one or two judges who've collected every article that's come out. So I had a chance to have a conference with several people who've been following us with these articles, and they were all university professors, they were government officials, whatnot, and they were, you know, kind of intrigued that the writer was appearing, you know, in person. So I'll just pass some of these around. Just look on page 7, you'll see the article. No, this is not Vasudev. This is Mr. Macquarie. I don't know if you remember him. Well, I don't think you know him. He was in Nigeria. But I have one devotee, Vasudev, who's writing himself, who's writing articles, and gives lectures at different conferences. And the main thing is that it's amazing because this devotee, Vasudev, he doesn't have any degree. But in all the, so many major academic journals, comparative religion, classics, philosophy, he has regular articles that come out. And he's like part of the staff, you know, of some of the journals. We gave him an award in Mayapur this year, because probably him and Satya Raj are the only people of that caliber in the whole world who have so much of an influence in academia. This devotee is just, you know, he's... just graduated from high school, never spent a day in college, and he's invited, you know, so many conferences, and very, very respected. He's quoted a lot. Previously, 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, he was writing for five newspapers. He had a column in 5 newspapers. But now he's one above that, and he has these things he's writing, you know, in journals. You know, the thick journals that are being published. What he does is the same thing that I do. You know, he just takes a contemporary issue. It can be abortion, it can be resource depletion, it can be crime, it can be drugs, it can be pollution, whatever. And he just takes a topic. And then he shares cutting edge information on that. And while doing that, then he brings in, you know, the Krishna conscious solution. And he's become so famous. I mean, matter of fact, he does it better than me. I mean, he's really amazing. I'm just totally astounded, you know, how he does this. He writes very clear, even though he hasn't had courses in writing. He's bold, a very bold, you know, devotee. And somehow the people are just accepting and getting him more and more involved. we're going to try to arrange, I sent to Prickshit a possible program that he can get a degree in off the internet, just so that he would even have more respect in these circles. We're going to try to see how, from America, that he can take a course offline and be able to get a PhD degree. He sent in for one school, university, and they told him that they'll be ready to honor him directly with a PhD degree that he's published, you know, so much that he wouldn't have to go through, you know, the master's degree, the bachelor's and master's, but they'll give him a PhD degree. So it sounded so amazing. I asked Prickshit to really check and make sure that it's not a hype, you know. So I'll find out. You know, you can put a lot of things on the internet and make it appear to be something, but so we're just checking to see that it's a legitimate school, and so we'll arrange for him to be able to, you know, to have a degree while he goes on spreading Krishna consciousness. And he's a brahmachari, a very austere brahmachari, very simple, very dedicated. He just travels, you know, in that way. This is a picture of media, where African devotees are from. On the front page are their deities, their worshipable deities. They're very, very beautiful, you know, tall deities, Radha Govinda. And there's the kids in the school did some plays while I was there, in drama. And it was on the internet. Very good. So you'll see some of this, and then cool. We'll pass this around. Children were very alert, very sharp. I was very impressed. I tried to spend some, you know, quality time at the school. So we have, you recognize some of them. We have a school in Ghana, in media. Of course, Srivastava going back now. They're going to, you know, try to develop the clinic. This visit, I saw the facility for the clinic for the first time. Just in that short time, since I was there about a year and a half ago, they've gotten some land, and they built a building that's going to be used for a clinic. I was very excited about that. I was also happy to see how our movement is being respected more in media. You know, when you do things for people that's relevant to their needs, they naturally begin to take you more serious, see you more functional in that sense. So for some years now we have this school, right? And the school is facilitating many people in the village. And there are the parents and teachers associations meeting, so the parents have to come and associate with the devotees at the temple, at the school. The children are getting basic education. We're not trying to proselytize. But of course, the manager of the temple, of the school, you know, are devotees. And so in the process, they're being exposed to Krishna consciousness. They're getting prasadam. They come, some of them come to, before they start the day off, they come for the reading of the deities and for the Guru Puja of Srila Prabhupada. Now some of these kids are Muslim kids. They're from Christian backgrounds, you know, all different kinds of backgrounds. So it's really helped that way. I think it's going to expand even more in the future. And then our devotees, there's even some of our devotees who are here, some of them are living within the town, within the village. So they have a room in the village. And so gradually, it's like devotees are just becoming all around, you know, in the whole area. So soon we have a Krishna conscious village. I was happy to see like that. I was very, I couldn't think of, you know, I'm going to Ghana, Sivas isn't there, he's the regional secretary, and our leaders, our devotees here, they're not there, because they're always there with me when I come. And I thought, what is it going to be like, you know? That several of the main leaders are not going to be, you know, with me. But I was very happy about the programs, and we did also very nice TV programs and other things. And then I did some class, some course, very good response. This is, you know, it's very enlivening. And to see what they're planning in the future, we're also securing some more land. Sivas will be paying for that right now from some of the donations he collected. And from there I went to Nigeria. Nigeria was a mix, very mixed for me. I was happy to kind of revisit the fact that we, you know, have 8 temples now that we own and we built. And we had just gotten 7 vehicles, 7 vans. Amazing, huh? So the devotees, you know, you guys are so spoiled that he had seven vans to try to stimulate the Harinam, you know, and the preaching. And we're getting so many books now. But at the same time, I found that the devotees have become more stagnant. And I was just reflecting, trying to analyze that. We had nothing, very little. There was so much pioneering and preaching. We didn't own our buildings. We were just renting little places. Now we got these, you know, these wonderful buildings that they've built. They have books like anything now. And now even have vans, you know. I mean, imagine. 6-7 vans all purchased at the same time. You know, this doesn't even happen in the West like this, you know. You know. But I asked all of my presidents to resign, because I felt that the movement in Nigeria had come to a point where the presidents were just sitting, and devotees. And the president is being the what do you say, the ogre, the king, and everybody just a few peon servants on the side, and nothing was happening. And so I said, you know, you got all these books, you got the vehicles, you got buildings, you know. I said, even in America, we don't own our buildings, you know. Come on, we pay mortgages, we don't own the buildings. And if we miss a couple of payments, the bank can kind of come and even threaten us to even take the buildings away. That you own your own buildings, you got all these facilities, you know, you got vehicles, you got books, you got opportunity, and you're making Krishna conscious like a church. So I gave them all a schedule that I want to see them be able to improve within 6 months and a year. And any of those who can't, you know, we're going to accept their resignation. So we'll see what happens, you know, what takes place there in the next 6 months or so. But that was the only kind of disappointment that I had in the whole trip. And that was an interesting disappointment, because it's a disappointment of more facility, more opportunity, but somehow, you know, the devotees just weren't taking advantage of it. I said, we would love to have some of these buildings in America. You know, we'd love to have these vehicles. If we had seven, all of a sudden we inherited, somebody came forth and bought 7 vans for us. You know, it was unbelievable. And anyway, you know, each place has its challenges and its opportunities, different things that it has to be confronted with. But we can see how Prabhupada is just so merciful, of how he's allowing so many millions of souls all around the world to be able to experience Krishna consciousness. So as we are struggling in our own areas, we should realize, yes, but this is a piece of the puzzle that makes up a massive movement. This is a piece of puzzle that adds to the simplicity and austerity that invokes the blessings of Mahaprabhu. This is a piece of the puzzle of how we maintain infrastructure to let Krishna allow the next thing to happen, I'm always amazed when I go to Russia and I see how little that the devotees have and how austere they are, but how joyful they are. That we don't have many temples in Russia. Most times devotees are just connecting at different houses, you know, Bhakti Viksha programs, Namahatas. They have major festivals just only once or twice a year. Some of the devotees who came to the main festival in Divnomorsk, and I went to another festival on the other side of Russia. Some of the devotees, it took them like 7 days to come to the festival. They would travel, you know, by train. You know, it would take them literally 7 days. It was like so austere. And many, when they came, first, they save the whole year, you know, to get money to be able to come. And then some of them, when they come, because of the cost of travel and the cost of the festival fees, they don't have any funds left, you know. But they just kind of know that somebody's going to somehow maybe help them. Or if they don't, you know, they just fast. You know? So this year they had like a food for life for the devotees. It was amazing. So just to make sure that everybody at least get one meal a day. So then every day there was like khichdi or something. It was amazing. And you would never know. I mean, devotees are just active and joyful and you know, very dedicated, and they work very hard. The you know, we mentioned how Russia was only first world in its its arsenal, but it's really like more like a third world country. That most buildings don't have running water. That most even public buildings, you know, have outside toilets. Schools, hospitals, outside toilets. I mean, for me, it's very difficult because, you know, I'm in a bathroom all the time. And so in Russia, you know, you can go to a place and you ask where the bathroom is. It's a point in the back of the building. And so sometimes the toilets are like really, really high. I mean, you're in an outside toilet, but now it's a huge pit. And the pit can be like 12 or 16 feet high. And you're thinking, what if you fall into this thing? I always wonder, how do the kids use this? What do the parents do? I mean, you're looking down, and, you know, 3/4 the height of this from here, from the floor to the ceiling. And you see this huge pit. And you think, oh my God. You know? You think, what if somebody slips? And then some of the toilets, I mean, this is pretty heavy. It's amazing. Some of the toilets, the way they facilitate the toilet is that they have worms and snakes. And so, here you are, and you're looking down, and you know, there's all this stool, and you have worms and snakes, and that's the bathroom. It's like unbelievable. I mean, the devotees are very austere, you know, and it doesn't bother them, you know. They are just active and, you know, making all kinds of sacrifices and being able to preach. So that was exciting to see how even with such little facility, where there is pioneering spirit and selflessness, how devotees can come up to the call. And we realize that's why Krishna is facilitating them having, you know, so much preaching opportunities. Why the Divinamurti Festival in Russia now is the biggest festival in the whole world. We have more devotees coming than in the Mayapur Festival. And now we have more leaders. There was maybe almost 20 of us, 20 sannyasis and gurus who were giving courses. So all during the day, there's courses, you know, 4 or 5 places you can go to a course. And devotees have been very kind to me every year. Every year, since they know my class is the largest, they give me the prime time. I have the 10 o'clock slot. Right in the main ballroom. And so from the stage, then I give the course. This year I think we counted about 2,200 students in the class, which was, you know, really beautiful and, you know, really nice. Okay, so that's kind of the summary, the highlights. One thing that was unrelated, that I just share with you, because I share with you, because it was very impressive to me, impacting. Devotees know I like to explore the countries in terms of their heritage and the cultural aspects. So one afternoon, in between going to a press conference and doing a university program, they took me by this very famous monastery. And this is the monastery where this famous book, I think it's called The Way of the Pilgrim or something, it talks about, Satyamaraj, he wrote something about this, about the Russian priest chanting, you know, the holy names of God. So there's a special order of monks who were very well famous for their intensity, you know, of devotion. Now, let me show you how intense, you know, these people were, these monks. They would take these amazing lifetime vows of dedication, of just preparing themselves to meet God. And what they would do is that they would allow themselves to be sealed within a cave. So they would go into a cave, and then they would have someone build a cave. As they get into it, then they would have someone to construct a window and just to cave them in. I mean, just to imprison them in the cave for life. There was no lights, no electricity, no toilets, no interaction with anyone other than the person who would come through the window and give the food, and I guess he would also take out whatever urine or stew they were doing in the pot and take it out. And all they would, and their commitment was to just pray for life. I mean, to the end of their life. I mean, just think about this. They make these vows, and once you're in there, there was no coming out. Because you're screaming, you're crying, anything they saw is all a part of your preparation for unfoldment, for meeting God face to face. And so it was understood that if you once you're in there, then you die there. And that's it. And so, you know, I was very eager to see this place, right? And now there's lots of miracles connected with this whole experience. The first is that their bodies didn't deteriorate. And so you could see the bodies of these people. They have them in glass case. Unbelievable. I mean, show the level of austerity, purity, and the level of greed that one is considering. Look, I'm going to meet God. And I'm just going to die preparing myself to meet him. Because if you think about it, if you are locked in a cave, no out, you see me at the end, it's just a window. First, it's slow death. Because the cave is so small, there was no way to exercise. There was no light, you know, so you go blind anyway. There was no interaction with anyone other than the person who brings you the food. So you start either hallucinating and you go crazy, or you go deep and deeper and deeper, and it's just you and Krishna. And so there's, even today, there's, you know, so many miracles. There's one saint that when you come to his casket, you touch his feet. Women who couldn't have babies, you know, able to have babies. There's another saint that when you make prayer to him, if you have sickness, sickness goes. Now this is a corpse now, you know. But through that deep prayer and meditation, and all they were doing is just chanting the names of God. And, you know, they would live, maybe some of them would, you know, live 15 years, 20 years, you know, 12 years. But the idea was that they were completely saying death to the material body, death to the material world, and look, God, here I am, I'm all yours. So you got to do your thing, because I'm going to do my thing here. Just be only for you. And so this was a very special order. So I had heard about it. I didn't realize he was in Ukraine. We were so close to it. So I was very eager. I spent a few hours there in the monastery. And it was, you know, very, very powerful, you know, very mystical. But it was also a confirmation of how important dedication, austerity, and spiritual greed is. Of how much that Krishna does reciprocate according to our determination in wanting to meet him, wanting to know him. There's also an additional confirmation that while we have to do so many things in our day-to-day life in dealing with material energies and material culture, that we have to constantly remind ourselves that this isn't the reality. This isn't the highest reality. And that we're bigger than this. We're more than this. We have to constantly remind ourselves that whatever we do in these bodies, it's going to wind up in some level of disappointment. Because people are going to disappoint you, you're going to disappoint them, your body's going to disappoint you, age is going to disappoint you, health's going to disappoint you, litigation is going to disappoint you, something's going to be there. And that while we should not be in denial, but we should realize that at some point we have to walk away from everything and be able to connect fully with Krishna. And that even the most destitute situation that one can be in, because they just put themselves in the most destitute, where they didn't have any TV, newspaper, radio, you know, they didn't even carry the books with them. They didn't even carry their own books. It was that you and the holy name, Bas. Huh? This is you in the holy name. And the diet was a death diet. It was just, I think, bread, water, and sometimes a little soup. So it wasn't a healthy diet. Wasn't a healthy situation to be where there's only one window. That means the air contact was also bad. Light contact, they didn't have lanterns, candles, nothing. I mean, unbelievable. And the cell was like, a small closet. If you move your hands like this, you couldn't stretch fully for the walls. I mean, it's like they really buried themselves alive. You couldn't stand and then stretch all the way. Unbelievable. So it was like literally that they buried themselves alive. And the idea was slow death, dying to live. Death, while you're slowly dying, just getting more and more focused, getting ready to meet the Creator. In that sense, it was quite awesome. So, I was thinking, I was laughing at one of the devotees. I was saying, well, if this kind of sannyasis had to do this, I think we wouldn't have hardly any sannyasis. It's okay, you want to be a sannyas? No problem. Go to the cave for 6 months, even. Say, next lifetime. Just for 6 years. No, see, even 6 months. I mean, it would be amazing. So we have certain austerities, but we have so much opportunity to try to impact on the world. Now, one may say, yes, but as devotees, we're not Bhajanandis. And that's true. We're Goshanandis, and so we are to commit ourselves to undergo austerity on behalf of preaching directly or maintaining the preaching in some way. And so that's our austerity. It's a different kind of austerity. But without austerity, there's no growth. There's no question of being able to grow in spiritual life if we're only thinking about how I can do something that fits into my comfort in my comfort zone. It just doesn't happen that way. Because without sacrifice, there's no love. Without sacrifice, there's no Shakti. And so we know that in our mission, we want to have facilities so that we can be able to render those facilities more in Krishna service. But our mindset should be that we don't belong here. And this isn't our world. And we're distinct visitors. And if we become overly absorbed in identifying with material body, material world, then we have to take many, many more lifetimes. Austerity, in one sense, is like that it's saying death to orthodoxy. So that I go where I'm really supposed to go and don't get too delayed. So they were speeding up their death in one sense with the idea of meeting Krishna faster and having nothing as a priority other than chanting the holy names. So this is the last thing I passed around. This is a picture. It's a brochure from that monastery. So I'm here then for 10 days and then to Detroit back after about a week and a half. Stay for another 2 weeks and then to have to figure out how I'm going to do it. Probably Dallas for the North American meeting, from there to Hong Kong, LA, Hong Kong, Australia, Fiji, to Malaysia. But we'll see in that sense. Yes. So, I'll be here for the New Year's, festival. Not for visual. I'll be here for, of course, the Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is Thursday. So Thanksgiving is Thursday. Then Friday we have the program in Harrisburg. And of course, the Sunday lecture. Any short questions? We've already taken up so many hours of your time by coming late also, so. Yes? Uh-huh. Rush? Hmm? Nita?
I was thinking, because I heard you mention about this before, mm-hmm. and I thought about this the last time, but I didn't quite get to ask the question. But I was wondering whether those devotees, were they attached to having those positions, or were they in the consciousness of being temple president because they were offering a service to you as a need? And the second part of that question is, now that they may not be playing those roles, are they taking the time to maybe reflect on more internal growth in their own spiritual life? Are they taking that time to maybe go on pilgrimage? Or are they taking that time and using it wisely, given that I know you're offering that separation of the role to assist them, but how are they actually taking that?
It's a nice question. Nigeria was the only place that I didn't do any outside programs. I just cut them off because I wanted to only be with my leaders every day. That's why I came back a little early also, because after I had done that, I felt, okay, I can close this chapter for now. Let's see what the future is going to be. So I went to different temples, but I took all the presidents and the BBT directors, which is usually like the vice president, the one in charge of the BBT shop, to stay with me every day. And we just did a course, an introspection, looking at their futures and their life, their level of devotion. We did a course to help them to look and consider if this is what they really wanted to do. If genuinely they were ready to continue in this level of service, even if they really were ready to continue being in the Hare Krishna movement. We took them through very invigorating reflections where they had to really look at at their lives. And we gave them opportunities to look at what they could be doing if they weren't devotees. So if they wanted to follow that course, an opportunity was there. And we've surely had them to look at how by being a devotee, they were benefiting more than most of them could, materially as well as spiritually. You know, and we left the choice up to them. But the idea is that we're tired of people being under them who were trying to become Krishna conscious, and were actually being exploited in some ways. And see, it's hard because the Nigerian culture is pretty rough, and that is a very survivalist kind of culture. And now with all the political problems and things, that there's a lot of insecurity. And so what had happened is that the presidents had just begun to become big sense gratifiers under the guise of spiritual life. For instance, sometimes the temples would have to eat very austerely, but the president would have his own cooking arrangements and his own facilities, and he's eating nicely, and his wife and others weren't. Some of the presidents were using the vehicles just for kind of not so much serious travel, whatnot. They weren't visiting the congregational devotees. In many places the congregation had come down almost a handful of people. Some places had very respectful congregations, but the congregational devotees just felt that the presidents just really weren't walking their talk, and they weren't extending themselves to try to facilitate the movement. And then I had them to go back to history, and I reminded them also that when I came to these countries, that we didn't have money, we didn't know how we were going to get back. We came on a one-way ticket, and that we didn't have vehicles, we didn't have books, we didn't have devotees, we didn't have any of these things that they have, and that this is how our movement grows. It grows from the austerity. Or as you've read, you've read the Harinam Chaitanya 3 volume, I'm sorry, Sacred Teachings 3, and I shared this in Yugoslavia because we had our 20th anniversary since our movement officially started in Yugoslavia. Since I was one of the first devotees to visit that part of the world, then I was, the main speaker, and I explained how we started our initial preaching in that part of the world. And devotees were shocked because, there were times when, we were under arrest, and there were days when I told them how there were days when I slept, on a bench at a bus station, had to wear the same clothes for 3 or 4 days. A couple of days when I just had bread, yogurt, and that I was chanting my rounds, you know, in the train stool room in the bathroom. In those days, I was chanting 42 rounds. And so it was just kind of austerity that helped these projects to be able to grow. And then from that, and one thing happens after another after another. Not that we came into facilities and the facilities are already there. If you think of any project around the world, that some people somewhere started off with some serious dedication and struggled and sacrificed, and some people died in the process, you know, their spiritual life, you know, got lost. So I was explaining to them, you know, that, yeah, this is how we first came to Belgrade, we first came, you know, to so many different places there, this is Zagreb, that we were in disguise. I was just with one other translator. One person was translating. That's why I don't drive now. I did all the driving. We'd wait for weeks and weeks and sometimes months without, you know, having an association. We're taking risks. And we would just accept, you know, whatever Krishna arranged. In that sense. And not that, you know, things just happen overnight. We came to Nigeria and Ghana. We didn't have any devotees. We didn't have any money. We were, you know, I came to Sierra Leone, these places. We just would find out maybe where there was some kind of Indians somewhere, what kind of, maybe some yoga, and we try to go to the yoga group and see if they give us a place to stay in their basement or in their porch or whatever. You know? And so I was reminding them, hey, you know, you guys got all this facility, and this isn't how Nigeria started or how our movement started around the world. And when you lose that austerity, then everything else begins to fall apart. Even within facilities. So we have facilities, but devotion had just gone, like, you know, out of the window, you know. And so we wanted them to know, look, this is volunteer, that you're not forced to do anything, that the process is to voluntarily to engage in trying to help to see how to serve others. And you've lost your focus on trying to serve others. So therefore, if I, as the leader, allow people to come under you, or under your care, while you're just kind of using them for whatever is comfortable for you, then this is, you know, this would be a disservice to Srila Prabhupada. So I believe that it took this, hopefully, level of wake-up call that will help them to step forward, because sometimes in the final analysis, even though we're devotees, we're selfish. And if we really can see something that's better for us, then we'll take it. Or if we really look at what the other alternatives are, and they're not so wonderful, then we kind of, you know, you get more focused. So I think because I've given them full chance that you can walk out tomorrow and you have my blessings. If you really feel that this is beyond your ability, that you don't really want to take care of people anymore, and you feel you just have to be about yourself, okay, then do it. But don't pretend. And don't cause others, don't tell others to be selfless, and at the same time, you're not going to be selfless. And so we told them, look, okay, you got 6 months, got a year. I gave them certain things I want to see them be able to accomplish in a year's time. But I said, I'll check on them in 6 months. Anybody hasn't come up to a certain standard in 6 months, that means automatic acceptance of your resignation. Now, you may say this may seem a little harsh in one sense. What about how they have sacrificed? Whatever sacrifice they've made is part of their eternal credit. Whatever they are ready to do in the future is what they have to be clear on. We live in the past, but we have to live in the present and the future also. And so Krishna consciousness is alive, and it has to go on every day. And each day is another chance, you know, to be able to commit to Krishna. So I wanted them to know, look, I want you to walk your talk, and I'm going to walk my talk with you. And so we want it to be that, look, here is what the opportunities are, here's what the past has been. Now you decide if you feel you're ready to come up to this level to do what's necessary, or if not, then take another situation and be honest and genuine, you know, in what that situation is. But as soon as the leaders lose austerity, the projects will just turn into turmoil. Even if the general devotees are not ready to be austere, the leaders lose austerity, projects will turn into turmoil. Because by the leaders maintaining austerity, it protects, you know, the colleague from coming in. And Kali is always eager to try to dismantle any spiritual projects, you know, as much as possible. Yes, please.
Mm-hmm. Depending on the conditioning of people, they may tend to see austerities in different ways.
Yes.
For example, someone may say, well, how is Bhakti Tirthamaraj performing austerity? He lives in this humongous house and, you know, it's so nice, and they may not understand the kind of austerities that you are performing. Mm. So how do we really help people that may have different approaches, different perspectives, different understanding of what real austerity means?
Mm. This is not austere, this beautiful house. Look how gorgeous it is. It's very wonderful. On a Russian show, one of the major talk shows, the host said, tell us about your palace. She said, did you come into the country on your private jet? She said, how many wives do you have? And she was serious, because she expected that there was going to be a yes to all of these. I said, I have no palace, but I have literally almost 100 of different facilities where I consider home. That when I'm there, that becomes my home. So I have no wife. Matter of fact, I'm celibate. And I've been celibate for over 30-something years. And I said, and I don't own a car. I said, I don't own a jet or a plane. I said, I don't even own a car. I said, but I got dozens and dozens of cars that are mine if I need them. So, Prabhupada, he had dozens of places that he could live in, and they were his. And even as poor as Africa is in some places, have really nice facilities. I mean, when I went to Africa after coming from Russia, Africa was a palace. I mean, in general, it was like a paradise. The Russian situation was like really austere. Living accommodations, you know. Every place I would go in Russia, except for the temples, and I just knew what the situation was. When everyone would leave, I would sleep in the room where whatever the facility was. It's usually the people live in these flats, you know, 1 or 2 bedroom flat, and every couch lets off into a bed because it just, you know, it just has to, you know, for people to be able. So I would just when I come into a place, I would just look at the couch and be like, that's gonna be my bed tonight, and I would just wonder, where is the bathroom, you know, and do I need a flashlight. You know, it's like that. So into Africa, you know, and you know, their own rooms and bathrooms, you know. That was awesome. That I was in heavenly kingdoms. So the thing is, why do we have somebody like Srila Prabhupada? And I compare myself to him, but why did he have all these facilities? Well, austerity does bring. Austerity brings protection. Just like in the case of Mother Clinton, she's very austere. But do you realize if she had an emergency, myself and several leaders around the world, and devotees around the world, would do whatever necessary to see that she gets help. So what happens is that if she was a man, she would be a sannyasi now. And she'd be just as austere, but she would have all kind of facilities based on the fact that she's moving people's hearts. That's why I'm a little bit disturbed that we are, you know, one of the first women now is being, offered to be guru, put up to be guru. There's a lot of resentment coming from some of the men in some sectors. But my feeling is that if we have women who are of the capacity to be guru, they move people's hearts, they know philosophy, they're living like that, it is our legacy that women can be gurus. So why not? Or why should we have the case, say, a man and woman are married, right? And of course, it's Vedic culture. The man takes a sannyas, And now he has all of these perks. He has all these opportunities. People are feeding him, taking his, washing his clothes, arranging facilities for him to live, paying for his air tickets, etc., etc., etc. And his wife, who also raised the children with him, his wife, who also remained in the movement, is austere. Now she's a widow, or she's in white now, right? And she's just at the mercy of whatever happens in the little temple, or whatever, where she gets sick or whatever happens to her. It just kind of happens. It depends on whatever happens. Where now the husband, he goes around, and he's got the good computer, he's got the best watch, he's got the cell phones, he's got the VIP food offering. People bring in $50,000 sometimes, and the wife is out of sight, out of mind, and she's just there. You know, it's like, hold a minute, you know, what's going on? So if someone can do like that, and they can also be a guru in a woman's body, then why not? Now here's where the trick is. Is that in ISKCON, austerity for men, if they enter sannyas, it brings facility. Yes? Austerity brings facility. If you have disciples, you have this, you have that. So therefore, it's a trick of Maya in one sense. Like these monks who renounce everything, in some ways, their spiritual life is safer because they locked themselves in where there was nothing to challenge them other than their minds and their health. There was no opportunities because they didn't have any opportunities. Now, most people won't do that, of course. But in one sense, they were safer. But now, the person who's going around and they're getting... I mean, just look, I just came from Russia. And I was treated almost like I had a state. I had security. I had people just ready to hear every word I would say. Every time I speak, I had at least 8 microphones in my face. And it was important. 8 microphones. Newspaper Lat yesterday gave me a full page article. How about you? You should give me a page and a half article. In other words, here is Krishna's trick. And it's wonderful. That Krishna gives you all of these things to see, what do you really want? Do you actually want me or not? I want to give you so many things that you can become distracted by if you want to. I mean, I just came from Mexico. Okay, and let me show you. I got just so many amazing disciples. And most of them, beautiful, attractive girls. I mean, literally, so many. Right there you saw, right? So many beautiful, attractive girls with lotus eyes. All right? Now, you know, they're my daughters, right? Now, you know, they're, Maharaj, how can I serve you? And I could be thinking, okay, you can serve me. I want to experience you. Or I could be thinking, you can serve, here's my daughter I want to need to protect. Guide, give shelter to, etc. So, it is really a way that if somebody can not give into this, they become very powerful. And that's why our genuine ISKCON sannyasis are stronger than these sannyasis who were coming from India from day one, have been in Gurukulas, connected with Vedic culture, and most of them, when they come to America and in Europe, they fall down with European and American women. Because they have been so away from these things, or they haven't understood what it really means to really be challenged and confronted with such. So then, if somebody can renounce when they have, see, it's nothing to renounce when you don't have. You say, oh, renunciation, yeah. When you don't have anything. But the real renunciation is when you have or have opportunities. Then it's a sign that you distinctly want Krishna. Now the question is, was I less enthusiastic when we lived in Butternut, in the basement, in a cellar? I mean, imagine this now. This is how the Institute started in Washington. We lived in Butternut. You saw the sheet numbers. Where we had a cellar that was actually even illegal. We came in from the back. You know how cellars, you go down a cellar. You remember? We came from the back. It was somebody else's house that had made a makeshift you know, rent a facility, one room. In that room, Raja Leela, Akendra, Ekavir, I'm sorry, Yasoda, and then later Mahamantra, and their guru. Huh? Six of us, five of us living in a one-room place, you know, with your guru now. The mothers just had like a, there was no special room for them. They're just in the corner over there, and I think you would put down a curtain. It's a curtain. A sheet, you know. And we're all using the same bathroom because it's a one-room place. And whoever goes in the bathroom, everyone has to hear them. I'm just telling you. This is how we had to live, you know. And we were fired up. It was unhealthy. The window was like the basement windows you kind of prop up like this with a stick. That's the only little air circulation that we had in this cellar. When I started the restaurant in Washington, and we first started in Washington, even before we started the Institute, we had a restaurant, and I lived in a closet. Couldn't even stand up in it. That, when at nighttime, we just put my mat down and live in the closet. And then when we would shower early before the restaurant opened, of course. There was no shower, there was no toilet, there was no tub. We just had the drain, and we all take, a cup, and we would just bathe. And on the floor of the bathroom, and let the water go in the drain. Then the last person was finished. We take the mop and clean up the water, and then open up the restaurant. After we do the Mangalartik and everything, open the restaurant, then we serve. Now the question is, was I less enthusiastic then than now? Huh? No. If you remember. We were active, and we were trying to do, you know, whatever that we could, whatever facility, you know, that was actually there. When I first came to Nigeria, and we just had a place, one Indians let us use, and one room, and there was no running water, there was no electricity, we had no furniture. When Mancha first met us, it was Ramananda and myself, just with our suitcases in a room. The suitcase was our desk, the suitcase was our prasad at a table. That was it. You know? And then after some while, you know, the guy put us out. He wanted to play. So, one has to be ready to serve if Krishna gives all kind of opulences, or if he takes everything away, well, we have nothing. Was I less enthusiastic when I got to Russia and I saw that I was going to have to go out in the middle of the night with no electricity and with a flashlight, with all kind of animals out there in their backyard, and go into a pit, to use a bathroom? I mean, I was inconvenienced because I'm older now, but I was just appreciating that some people have to deal with this every day, and how amazing that in a week or two I'm in another place, a different kind of encounter. So the point is, we must find ways that whatever's happening, we take care of our situation, because we have to maintain body and soul together, but we find a way to preach in spite of whatever is happening or not happening in that way. Now, when I get to this kind of facility, just like now, Mahabhashayana just bought a new house. I distinctly told them, when you buy this new house, don't try to facilitate quarters for me. So you just, you got your two boys now, they're older, take care of your family and see that you can arrange something to facilitate the devotees. So I just came back now, and I came back, and I'm coming out to the house for the first time. And here they got this, this gorgeous house that they bought. And they have this arranged, this wonderful suite, for me to stay in. Isn't it? Beautiful, isn't it? So, austerity does produce different kind of results. It brings internal wealth, and sometimes it even brings external wealth. The external wealth can be a blessing in disguise if you become attached to it. If you give me a place, I'm going to fix it up. Because where I came from in previous lifetimes, I'm not used to simplicity. And so wherever I go, I'm going to change the energies. I'm energy conscious. I'm going to make something out of nothing. You know? You see every place I go, you know, I decorate, do this, do that, in such ways. Because that's his nature, you know, that of my energy, in essence. But the question is, now what happens if tomorrow, if Krishna took all this away? Then will we still go on with enthusiasm? I mean, I never hope it ever happen. But if, say, if 3/4, 80-90% of the devotees who assist me around the world, if they left, looped, do you think I would be less active than I am now? You see me year after year. People have come and they've gone. And I'm sad and I see somebody not taking advantage of the process. But we find a way to go. So we have to have that kind of conviction about the service, you know, of our spiritual master. We have to feel, when I took initiation, I gave myself over to my guru, Srila Prabhupada. And therefore, it's for him now to decide what to do with my life. Let me use my intelligence as best as I can, but at the end of the day, I want to keep in this prayer to the Prabhupada, if this will be pleasing to you, let it happen. If not, you know, stop it. Srila Prabhupada, use me the way that you feel I can best be used while there's opportunity, while I have time. Like I said, you know, the body is falling apart, but I'm not sad, I'm not depressed, I'm not bewildered. I'm not even ready to stop. I mean, the doctor says, okay, you know, all this plain stuff is accelerating the prostate, it's causing the lung problems, it's causing the hypertension. I said, well, this is my life. So I will see what to do to try to minimize it if possible. But we're not stopping. Did Prabhupada stop? His last days, he's still trying to translate his books. So, how wonderful to die on the field. We don't want to speed up that death, but how wonderful to be able to die on the field. I just wrote one devotee yesterday who was suffering. And I said, isn't it interesting that the more you keep trying to just think of yourself, the more you suffer? Think of yourself in relationship to how you can better yourself to help and to serve others. And you'll find different things begin to happen, at least in your consciousness. Externally, people have karma. There are certain people, doesn't matter whether they're devotees or not, they have karma that they're going to draw wealth. There are certain people, doesn't matter whether they're devotees or not, they have a certain kind of karma that's going to bring a lot of children, or bring no children. And that's going to be there. So we have that along with the devotee factor. A difficulty for us in our movement sometimes now, that now we have this issue that our movement is a movement basically of householders now. And that's okay. But most of our householders have more of a brahminical kind of energy, and therefore making money and gathering money is very difficult for us. It's like out of their grain. It's possible, but it's very difficult because of the kind of karma they have. Possible, but for many, it's very difficult. And some, even when they get some finance, they just don't manage it properly because it's not in their consciousness. It's not in their, you know, in their karma. But then others, if they really put out, they're going to find ways how they're going to really develop, and they should. To be able, because you can't expand without power, wealth, and some influences. And so that's needed. I had karma. You know, I had a couple of times the boys did charts on me. And one of the main things it shows in my charts, because of austerity, there will always be certain wealth and facilities. And the wealth, if the charts are right, the wealth that comes in the future is awesome. I wish it speeds up. Wish it would speed up. We can pay off this mortgage and do other things. But the wealth in the future is awesome. But it's connected with austerity. So we pay a heavy price for trying to engage in sense gratification and Krishna consciousness. And as we can regulate or give up our sense gratification, then there's opulence. Mother John? Yes.
By what number has our God family increased with your latest initiation?
Many places I would do about, you know, maybe 20 or 30 devotees initiated. So, I'll check on that. Yeah, I'm not sure. Yes.
I'm trying to update our database, and now I definitely have to work on an international aspect of it. So I really would like to get the names and
I'll gather it for you in maybe 2 days or so, because I have the list of, you know, the new devotees, what their names are. Which it becomes very interesting, like in Croatia and in Russia. Now before I get the names out, I have somebody to check. Because sometimes the Sanskrit name is an offensive name in the language. Huh? Yeah. I had a name for one disciple in Russia. And before I gave it to her, I asked someone, is anything similar or is this name also in Russian? The devotee said, Maharaj. He said, that name means prostitute. I said, oh my God. So a healthy Sanskrit name, because these languages are so close to Sanskrit in some cases, that name may mean a certain thing in Sanskrit, but then in the local language can mean the total opposite. So it becomes a little more careful as we give names in this one. But I have the list, and we'll give it to you. Any last question? I've held you all the way to lunchtime already. Mm-hmm. So one thing we should do is that we should try the science of trying to be more austere and to see what it brings us internally as well as externally. That wanting to serve others with greater intensity does bring a certain kind of reciprocation. And if we look at our lives, we can see different periods in our life when that happened, when that has happened. As we try to see how to facilitate mission of Prabhupada more. And then from that, one thing after another, you know, begins to happen. Mm-hmm.
Gurudev, some of us as devotees are still neophytes. Somehow we have much attachment to the physical form of the guru, more than the instructions. Actually, it's not supposed to be so, but especially myself, that is my level now. So, and I heard that you were in DC and your health was not very sound. I was feeling that if there is a way you could slow down the pace so that at least we can still have much of your personal association. But from your statements, it's like there is no way you're going to slow down. So I cannot direct you as to what to do, but we're feeling that if there is a way of you slowing down somehow to promote your health so that we can still have your physical association, we'll also be very happy.
We can look at it from another angle. We can say maybe Guru is not going to slow down, but maybe if the devotees can speed up and amplify, you know, their devotion, then that side will be less difficult. Because I was never sick until I started taking disciples. I was in a sick day of my life. So the physical complexities are connected with my own karma and environmental influences, along with, you know, with that from devotees. So better if the devotees are reflecting on how can we intensify our own devotion so that that goes more into the consciousness and the body of the guru than our deviations or our greed, our lust, you know, etc. So hopefully some devotees will think more in that way, that let us see what we can do to be able to help Guru in his service to Sri Prabhupada more by trying to be more fixed in our own devotion, to be able to bring a better ourselves, you know, into the environment. See, with so many disciples in such a difficult time, many people's lives, then you also have an accelerated amount of devotees who are getting weak. Then when you have that, then you are, you know, you're connected with that, and you have to experience certain things because of that as well. So better to think that way. It was the last Harinam Press meeting we had, not this one, but the one before, and I had mentioned to devotees, you know, we got these three books in line now, and once they are finished, we'll slow down. And I think Vidagata Uyda Kripa says, oh yeah, we've heard that before. and they're actually right. That right now I'm working on Spiritual Warrior 6, which is to stop the violence, and we'll be able to gotta get that done in the future. And we have 4 and 5 that would have been finished, but Subal had his transplant. He had liver transplant, I think pancreas transplant, so that slowed us behind. But Chaitanya Maharaj is finishing the commentary on the Sri Upanishad, so it's probably on my desk. I guess on my desk now. Another book, which I'm going to be doing the next 10 days here. And again, because we feel a calling to do this now, and we want to use the time as best as we can. Now, if there's a strong message I feel I get from Prabhupada that I shouldn't travel, then I'll be very happy not to travel so much. But right now, I'm getting the opposite message. Okay. So, I want to try to be available for these 10 days as much as I can. If any of you want to see me, we can, maybe it's wait to, what if you want to see me, you know, you arrange the times. But I'll come for a program on Thanksgiving, Friday for Harrisburg. And of course, Sunday to give the Sunday class. And the other times I'll try to have this ready for Lita Gita. The 6th I should have maybe in 2 days, but I want to give you, when we finish, what we have now. And then the Shusha Upanishad, I'll try to work on that in the next couple of days. So let's enjoy the fact that Prabhupada is not telling us to lock ourselves up in a cage. You know, like the picture which the brochure that went around that monastery. So we don't have that kind of austerity. We have the austerity of trying to see how to preach by either directly speaking or by how we live. I mean, in one sense, devotees need to be able to speak and to share philosophy, and that's there. But we have to even go beyond that, where we are living in our, you know, our life is our message. Because sometimes even just the idea of trying to speak the philosophy to someone else comes with some arrogance and with a lack of working on our own internal life. So in one sense, this tour, although it had a lot of positive effects, it was also a dangerous tour because there was so much fanfare. And with the fanfare, one can begin to think, oh yes, you know, I am doing this and I am doing that. And so this, you know, all these dangers that can be there if we accept them. And we go through the countries, I can think, yeah, okay, so now, I was the one who helped start this project, speaking in Yugoslavia and this country and that country. Big deal. You know, but what about today and what about tomorrow? That Krishna has recorded what we have done in previous years, but we have to eat today, and we have to sleep today, and we have to engage in devotion today. And then we have to do tomorrow. So we don't want to forget about the past. We want to keep, you know, revisiting it. We don't want to be the kind of person who's only living in the past, and not ready to be excited about the opportunity, the adventure, and even the challenge that's around the corner tomorrow. As we think about how many things that we want to do for serving Srila Prabhupada, remind ourselves that it's all up to Krishna and Prabhupada. See how the case of Tamal Krishna Maharaj, so much preparation was there for certain type of preachers. But it's all up to Krishna and Prabhupada. We should all plan and agitate our minds about what we think we would like to see happen. But we have to be ready to drop on whatever you want, whatever you feel, whatever you need, wherever you think that I should be, wherever you think that I can serve best. And so in some cases it may even mean Prabhupada says, oh, best way you can serve is you come and join me, take us away. Or it may be, okay, now you've done all of this public relations stuff, now you just give all of that up. You're ready to walk away from anything. Or now you do more of this communication, public relations, or not. You're ready to accept it. Or now you stop writing books. Okay, no problem. Or now, you write more books. And since I left, the editions in Macedonian have come out. Some new German editions of the books have come out. And of course it's his biography. And so this is happening kind of on its own. When something happens on its own, like this biography, I would have never, really commissioned anybody to do a biography. It's just too controversial. It's just, a biography when somebody's still alive. It's like an ego thing, if somebody's alive, tell somebody, you do a biography on me. But here it just happened. It wasn't even a disciple who, may have been zealous and wanted to write something about their guru. And, I'm getting letters from so many people saying how they have been helped, from Russia who are reading the book. And